or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
You're going to be guinea pigs. On Wednesday, I'm frankly fairly flattered that UC Berkeley, they do these things called public lectures. And they're asking me to be the person giving the public lecture. That'll occur Wednesday. But because it's a big deal, I want to be sure I'm prepared. And so that's where you come in. I won't bore you with the whole thing. It's a little long for a radio show. But I will at least trot out some of the probably three or four of the main points that I'm hoping to make. And then I will ask, perhaps even beg, for your input. I'll invite you to call in. I'll probably do one of these points at a time and then invite you to call in. And you can tell me if you think the idea sucks, if you think it's good. You can amplify, disagree, tell me I'm wonderful. That's always welcome. Whatever it is you like, and that will be just fine. And as always on this show, or as usual at least, I do invite you to call in for what I call a three-minute workover. If you or someone you love is struggling with your work life, whether you're a clerk or a CEO, a medical scientist or a career counselor, if you are struggling, I'd be happy to try to help you with what I call a three-minute workover. I'm not going to give out the phone number just yet, but screw up your courage. Screw your courage to the sticking place, whatever that Shakespearean phrase was. And in a little while, we'll go to the phones. The speech I'm going to be giving at Berkeley is called Eight Career Truths That May Not Be So True. I'm in my 26th year as a career counselor, and I find myself kind of musing a bit about how valid some of these eight truths about one's work life that most people assume are definitely true. Like, for example, first is follow your passion. Or, I mean, I think if there was a Bay Area motto, it might well be follow your passion. Or maybe do what you love and the money will follow. Or if the money doesn't follow, your parents or somebody else will take care of you. And really, most career counselor trainings emphasize do what you love and the money will follow. Tell your clients to follow their passion. Think about it right now, dear listener. How many times have you heard somebody tell you, follow your passion, do what you love? I'll bet your mother said that to you, your father, friends. Oprah says that to you. And when I started out as a career counselor, I indeed routinely encouraged people to follow their passion, do what they love. And sometimes it works, absolutely. Right now, I mean, I think of people who listen to public radio, they are environmentalists. If they're anything, they're all environmentalists. And there are probably hundreds, if not thousands, of people here in the Bay Area who are following their passion, doing what they love in the environment, and they're a manager, a director, a vice president, an individual contributor in some environmental company or a social activist entity or whatever. So it works sometimes to follow your passion. But sometimes, too often, it doesn't. I am thinking about one of my earliest clients. I'm not going to tell you her first name, even, just to be safe. And she was a bright woman, a dedicated woman, a focused woman. And her passion was environmentalism. So she was one of the first, and it was like 1986 or whatever when I was first starting career counseling. And she had devoted herself heart and soul to getting lead out of paints because of all of the inner city African-American kids who were eating paints and all that horrible thing. And she was one of the first in the nation to be building a straw bale house, you know, out of old bales of straw. She is as dedicated, and she even wrote a book. I'm not going to tell you the book again because it's, you know, going to reveal who she is. But she wrote a book on the subject. And she tried, like the Dickens, to land a good job. She was never able to make more than $10 an hour. And she's now she's in her 60s. She stayed in touch with me, as many of my clients, I'm grateful that they do. She's now in welfare housing. And in her 60s, and's got high blood pressure and scared and one step from homeless. And she's wondering, What is all of this story about do what you love, the money will follow, follow your passion? So, now in my 26th year as a career counselor, I'm a little more nuanced. Sure, maybe follow your passion. But just maybe a more nuanced approach is required, like think about whether you should follow your number one passion, or is there something else that you can find interesting enough that's got a hell of a better risk-reward ratio for how you should spend your time? I mean, for example, this is an important point. It's a couple of things. First of all, what pops into my brain is this. The problem with following your passion is that most people's passions, especially here in the Bay Area, tend to center around a very small number of things. They're passionate about the environment, the arts, poverty. They want to end the Republican Party. They are passionate about entertainment, sports, broadcasting. Those are a tiny, an infinitesimally small percentage of all of the enterprises that exist in the world. Enterprises, for-profit, non-profit, whatever. And so supply and demand means that if you're going to be like the lemming who's going to say, I'm an environmentalist, my passion is environment, you're going to have 9,000 other people applying for that job. And here's the punchline. Let's say you get one. Because employers know there are 9,000 other people waiting in the wings to get your job, salivating to get your job, they don't have to pay you much. And they don't even have to treat you well. Do you know how many people work for environmental organizations and the boss expects you to put in very long hours because you're working for the cause? And in the end, quietly, privately, if you are working long hours, being paid crap, being treated not very well because the boss knows there's 9,000 others, you may be, quote, following your passion. But are you really content with your work life? One of the things that I've learned over the 26 years, if I filled the room with all the people who are content with their work life, they're not necessarily overrepresented by people working in cool careers or in fields likely to a priori engender passion. They're more likely people who are doing work where it is moderately difficult, not too easy, not too hard. They have a nice boss, decent coworkers, a reasonable commute, and reasonable pay and job security. It's not, and the real punchline is, you're more likely to find that away from the common passions than if you are pursuing one of the common passions. So, let me tell you a couple of stories, of success stories. I have a client who cared about the elderly. And so he is now working as a marketer for a company that provides very high-quality elder care. It's not as sexy. Old people, elders, old, it's not as sexy as the environment. Or yoga, right? How many people want to be yoga instructors here in the Bay Area? Every time I turn over a rock, I want to be a yoga instructor, body worker, right? So the competition for making any money as a yoga instructor is like it's easier to get into Harvard, right? I have another client who's an Egyptologist. It's not something that, you know, it's not like she wants to be a phone operator where the jobs are dying and dead. There is demand for Egyptologists. The Middle East, unfortunately, there is no scenario under which we can envision that the Middle East will cease to be a hotbed of interest from the government, from companies, etc. So she's an Egyptologist, but it's more under the radar. But my favorite example is a woman who, for whatever reason, likes wine glasses. I mean, I've got another client who's a wine lover, and he ends up, occasionally running pourings for for fancy rich people or whatever, but most times he's pushing barrels around. But she, who for whatever reason loves wine glasses, she found some of the most beautiful, and she brought one into a session with me. It's gorgeous, most beautiful. It's by some Austrian priest. They're gorgeous. Father Zolot or something like that. They're gorgeous. And she's like selling these things and making a great living, but it's under the radar. That's one of my favorite words, under the radar. So this more nuanced approach to follow your passion is, yes, maybe you should follow your passion, but maybe you should think of some area you're interested in that isn't so widely held, or even to recognize that career contentment comes far less from doing something cool. Even if I know a client she works for East Bay Mud, and she's an accounts payable clerk. She loves her job. Makes $55,000 a year, full benefits, lots of times off. When work is over, she's home. She has fun at home, family, fun, yoga, and all that stuff. But it's not a sexy field at all. And yet she's more content than most people I know who are working in the arts or the environment. Of course, there's many exceptions. I want to stress, I started out by saying there are countless people who are thrilled working for their passion, working for the San Francisco Arts Commission, or working as a broadcaster for the San Francisco Giants, or whatever. But it's more nuanced. This is what my call is. My call is to stop with the kind of broad brush, overgeneralizing thinking, but rather to think about risk-reward ratio. One other little technique that I use with some of my clients is this. At some point, it may be worth, like if I wanted to be an actor and it just feels like that's what I was meant to do on this earth, I wouldn't tell my client, well, stop being an actor. It's just that's ridiculous. It's not human. It's not real. But where I have been successful in helping people to gain a measure of perspective is circle a date on your calendar. 3 months from now, 6 months from now, 2 years from now, and devote yourself with laser focus, heart and soul, for that period of time to achieving your goal of, in this case, being an actor. If you see signs, the world gives you signs that, in fact, you are going to make a living as an actor, even if you're not getting rich yet, fine, you can pursue your passion unbridled with the risk-reward ratio is not bad. But if you're spending a year really working hard as an adult, I'm not saying when you're a kid, but when you're in your 20s already or older, and you're putting in an additional laser-focused year fueled by your fear that you'll have to give up your dream, and if after a year all you're doing is little community theater and nobody's paying you anything and there's no real promise of getting paid, congratulations. You've got a hobby. You've at least given yourself the shot. You've taken the shot full force. And so you can look yourself and your family in the eye and say, I didn't give up my dream prematurely. I followed it, and the world is saying, not right. As the country western singer, it wasn't Cam or whatever, says, you got to know when to hold, Kenny Rogers, you got to know when to hold them, and you got to know when to fold them. And so that's my first of my career truths, so-called truths, that may not be so true that I'm planning to talk about at my speech at UC Berkeley Wednesday. But now I invite you, if you have a reaction to what I said, either one of agreement, one of disagreement, one where you care to amplify, tell a story, whatever, on the notion of the Bay Area motto, follow your passion, do what you love, and the money will follow, I invite you to call. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And I give you a second reason to call. As always, if you are stuck, you have career miasma, you're in career miasma, career malaise, and you are looking to solve your career conundrum, I can usually at least help you take a baby step forward by doing what I call a 3-minute workover. The phone number for that, as well as for your comments about Follow Your Passion, 415-841-4134. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm an example of a guy who didn't follow his passion. I was trained to offer statistical help to researchers. And when I went to do that, and in all my summer jobs, they said, can you program a computer? This was long ago when that was a rare skill. And I started by saying no, and they said, that's okay, we'll train you. And I kept being pushed toward computers, and pushed and pushed and pushed. And finally, I got my degree, and I went out for a job, and same story. Can you program a computer here?
Hmm.
And so finally, I gave in, and I did not follow my passion of statistical consulting and did follow the easy road of computer programming, and it turned out wonderful. Because it was a field with so much demand, I was well paid, I was well treated, and I was good at it, but I thought I would be good at it because I'd been doing it for a couple summer jobs. And it just worked out great. So giving in to not following your passion can work out super.
And said even more positively, it is giving in to what the world is telling you at some point.
There you go.
Not in the short term. The world is telling you, we want you here, we don't want you there. And the second lesson embedded in what you said is that you were good at it. It's not like you were bad at it. So the intersection of skill and opportunity may be a wiser calculus for determining what kind of work you should do than the mindless mantra that we too often fall into, follow your passion and do what you love. I thank you so much for the call. All the lines are lighted up, so let's go right back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. Hi.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
My name is Claire.
Hi, Claire.
I'm a psychotherapist, and so I deal with this from a little different direction. Mm. But it's not my first career either, and speaking of my own career, that it's a lot of hard work. I mean, I have a business to run, you know, the marketing, and I enjoy those aspects, and many people in private practice, they don't think about that.
Right.
You know, so you understand that, and I have enjoyed that part, and I have a successful practice that supports me and my family. One of the things that I try to sit with people with, how's that for a sentence, is the disappointment that you can't make, that maybe you can't make a living at your passion. And all this emphasis that the only place we can carry out our passion is in our work. My God, we do need volunteers for all those things that you were talking about.
Exactly.
And so... But there's an ego thing, and there's a, you know, some belief about oneself that you should be doing it that way through paid labor.
Right.
And so what would it be like to work 40 hours a week, 35 hours a week at a job that you liked well enough if you knew that you got to have plenty of time for your family for that other activity?
Absolutely. You know, I am very much involved in the world of theater. And the professional actors are much more unhappy than the amateurs because the professionals are spending all their time, competition's enormous, auditioning, flying to New York, doing all this stuff, and then they're lucky they get some stupid little bit part.
Yeah.
Whereas somebody who is equally good but says, you know, this is my hobby, they get to play lead roles. And even if it's community theater or whatever, it's still an audience. It's still the excitement, and especially here in the Bay Area where there's 9 million great talents in the creative space, you know, they end up having a very high level experience. So yes, those passions, those commonly held passions, are often the world's worst career and the world's best hobby.
And the place I want to say again, though, to hold, is that it is difficult to come to terms with that. It's like the athlete that begins to know that their athletic career and that is ending. How do you come to with a loss? I mean, those are real psychological issues, and it's not a just do it thing.
I appreciate your call. Great perspective.
Okay.
Thanks very much. You know, I want to riff on that just a little bit. There's another truth that was implicit in what she said, which I'm not so sure is so true, that it isn't just a matter of just do it. You have to process the grief, which was an implication. If you were an athlete, you no longer be an athlete, or an aspiring actor can no longer be an actor. You got to process it. While that is sometimes true, I have more often found that the more you process, the more mired you are, the more you grieve, those negative memories, the anger or the sadness or whatever, though the neurons in your brain associated with those thoughts have been exercised. They're like a muscle. It becomes a stronger part of your memory. It becomes top of mind. I cannot tell you how many people I have been a career counselor to who have had psychotherapy to, quote, grieve whatever. the loss of a spouse, the loss of a job, the loss of a dream. And the more they've processed, it's harder for them to get past. So I would argue that at least sometimes the wisest thing, though it seems anti-intellectual, not in touch with people's need to process and feelings, that the wisest approach ultimately really is to force yourself to change your behavior first and your attitude will change later. Deciding that, okay, if I'm not going to be an athlete anymore, I am going to take the next step to opening a car dealership or whatever it is, and not grieving. It is the little step-by-step accomplishments toward opening up that car dealership that will likely help you get past the grief more than the lamenting and processing with or without a therapist. Anyway, let's take another call. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind?
Yes. I concur with you completely that, you know, we shouldn't just seek out passion in our work, and we should be, realize that the real world has a lot to tell us in terms of whether we should be doing what we should do. And I think that's a great approach for your speech in Berkeley. I'd only make a small criticism,
sure.
And that is that I think I'd be a little bit less dismissive about some of the passions that people are following, whether that's, you know, people are wanting to be yoga teachers. You mentioned that they come out from under the rock, or
there's millions of them.
Environmentalists or whatever. You also might give a couple of examples of conservative passions, you know, the desire to become a preacher or a rabbi or, you know, something that also might need to be tested against the marketplace for religion or whatever.
Yeah, it's very interesting. It's because there are, if I was in Cincinnati, where there are so many conservatives, I'd probably give conservative examples because everybody wants to start a business. But
right.
Here in the Bay Area, and this show is heard mainly in the Bay Area,
That's true.
You know, the people, there are not 10,000 people wanting to start auto dealerships. There are 10 zillion people wanting to be yoga teachers. Anyway, I thank you very much for the call. Let's take one more call before I go on to the second of the major career truths that I think warrant some more close examination. So, welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. What's on your mind? Hi, it's you. It's your turn.
Hello.
Hi. What's on your mind?
Oh, well, thank you. I'm going to follow up on two remarks. You talked about skill and opportunity, which is great. But I think that there's every individual has to have a passion to do anything at all. And then the job is to learn about the world and see where you fit in or, you know, try and make your mark the way you imagine. And the distance between skill and opportunity may be... That's the contribution you make, learn to understand your world, learn to see where there's a need, and then imagine how you can be creative or problem-solved in that environment which you brought your skill to and your passion to.
Yeah, there are some people for whom the first step along the way is passion, but I've found many people who don't have one overlying passion or even any. They feel neutral to many, many things, and they're not necessarily depressed. But they are nonetheless, many of them who are quite content with their career life because they recognize that all productivity is worthy. For example, I could see somebody, I can't think of anything that's less core, you know, worthy, certainly in Bay Area terms, than being a shoe shine person. You're not changing anything, you're just putting polish on a shoe. And yet, somebody who realizes that all work that somebody's willing to pay for is providing value, and it starts not from passion, but a sense of caring about productivity, can make you career content even without passion.
Yeah. I remember one, I had a job as a dishwasher in London, about as low as you can get.
Right.
And there was a Saturday night when all the drains blocked, and I solved the problem, and the owner of the restaurant later asked me if I'd like to run the restaurant he was opening next door.
Wow.
That's it's not my world, but I thought, well, that's a lesson in life.
Mm.
Solve problems and understand your environment. I'm now a musician, so it's different. But, you know, but I just thought it was very interesting to ally to your remarks about skill and opportunity.
There is, you know, the older I get, and I'm going to talk about this a little later, is that luck matters. So it was the luck and skill and good attitude. So you had the good luck of having that drain clog. You had the good luck of being able to know the skill to fix it, and you had the good luck of a boss who happened to be opening up another store and as of a mindset that he recognized it. Luck matters. You know, I used to think when I was younger that luck really, you know, we make our own luck. As I've gotten older, I think that's another of those career shibboleths, and it's wise to realize that luck does matter. I thank you so much for the call.
Thank you.
You are listening to Work with Marty Nemco, and I'm using you as guinea pigs. I have the I'm very flattered that UC Berkeley has asked me through their extension to give what they call a public lecture on Wednesday. And I'm calling it 8 Career Truths That May Not Be So True. And I'm running a few of those by you today. We spent the first part of the show focusing on the career, quote, truth that is particularly present here in the Bay Area or widely believed. That is, follow your passion and do what you love. The next one is that, and this is not at all Bay Area specific. This is pretty ubiquitous. Networking is key to your career. Everybody, almost everybody seems to agree with that. And yet, after 26 years as a career coach, I have come to believe that that's a bit overbroad. Yes, some of my clients have gotten all their jobs, otherwise boosted their career thanks to networking. And they love the process. They love schmoozing at events. They've become LinkedIn ninjas and, you know, all that kind of stuff. It seems that jobs almost come to them. But for other people, networking has been a waste of time. They spend time, they go to all these meet and greet, wine and cheese, press the flesh, whatever it is. They go on LinkedIn, they join groups, they make comments, they do everything, and they get absolutely nothing for it, whether it be landing a job or even inside information on the new thing in the field. They get nothing. And here's the punchline. Still, other people have been hurt by networking, and I'm one of them. I have a large adrenal gland. And so I talk too fast. I talk too intensely. And so you put me in a networking situation, and I'm worse off than if I didn't do it at all. I have come to the position as a career counselor, now having worked with a zillion clients, that one size does not fit all. And the mantra, network, 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 is stupid. It depends on who you are. And I'm now going to give you a few questions to help you assess whether for you, how much time you should be spending on networking. First of all, basic, does your career need networking? Like if you're unemployed, it certainly could potentially help. Or you're looking to move up or move into another employer. Or you're trying to get some inside information. You're, you know, a medical researcher and you're trying to find out what's going on in the University of Munich. You know, it can help to develop relationships so that people will share stuff that hasn't been published yet. So, does your career need networking? Number two, to this point, have you found that your networking has been worth the effort? I mean, the past is a reasonable predictor of the future, right? That's critical. You're not going to, you know, I know America is the land where if you, you know, work hard enough, you can be anything. But no, we have certain basic personalities. I will never be laid back. Never. It's not in my DNA. So you got to ask, you look at your track record like a horse. If a horse has lost 20 races in a row, you're not going to figure it on race 21 something they're going to win and bet a lot of money on it. So look back at your past. Has your networking efforts in the past been worth the time and effort? Do you enjoy networking? Sometimes things are good for you, but you hate it. Right? Like, it's good for me to be eating kale. I don't like kale. Right? Even if you are good at networking and you enjoy it, is that the wisest use of your time? What could you otherwise be doing? Let's say networking was going to help me somewhat, but other activities will also help me. Like, let's say getting better at what I do. So instead of deciding I'm going to fly to Topeka to some conference so I can network and spend that money, maybe I'll hold myself up in my cubicle and I'll read more about whatever it is I need to read, what I need to learn. The question is opportunity cost. Would you be better off doing something else? Next question is to assessing how much you should network. Is your existing network liberally laced with people who could help you? Because if you've just moved from Topeka, and you don't know a soul here, and most of the people you know are not in your field, you know, the probabilities, again, of your existing network helping you are small, and that's another good reason that you should not network much. By the way, one of the other, I think, misguided pieces of advice about whether you should network is, well, if you don't have a good network, you can build one. Crap. It takes a long time, usually, to build a network that's powerful enough that somebody's going to actually help you get a job or whatever. You could be eating cat food by the time they've helped you. So I think it's much wiser to make your decisions as to how much to network based on your existing network. I'm not saying, no, you know, of course, you know, if there's no time urgency, fine. Get active in your professional association, join the program committee so you can deal with all these other smart people who are picking out who's going to come to the, who should speak at the conference, and you get to maybe talk to some of the potential speakers, fine. But if there is any time urgency to your networking, then you need to find out, ask yourself, how good is your existing network and how much are you likely to benefit from networking with them? Okay, so again, more nuance here. Instead of the standard advice, network, 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 ask yourself, given those five questions that I've asked you, for you, how much should you network moving forward? Now, so I invite you to call as well. I'm tackling one of the linchpins, one of the pillars of thinking about career. Network, network, network. Anybody want to call in to agree? Not anyone, as many of you as you want, of course. To agree, disagree, amplify. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco. For your comments about the truth, lack thereof, or need for nuance regarding principle of networking is key to your career, network, network, network. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And as usual, if you have no interest in talking about that, but you have an interest in you, your career, you are stuck anywhere from yours. I don't care if you're 16 or 86. If you still have career musings for yourself or somebody else and you need some help, whether it's making the most of your current job, a boss you can't stand, a supervisee, a direct report, excuse me, who you dislike and can't get rid of, you want some help, any kind of career, or a business. Let's say you're thinking of running or starting a small business and you're scared. Maybe you'd like some ideas on how to tweak it, make it better, or get my thumbs up or thumbs down like the Shark Tank. Phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. I promise I'll try to not be a madman. Okay. All right. While we're waiting for calls to come in, I'm going to go to another of what I think are the eight career truths that I think deserve a second look, and that I will be talking about at UC Berkeley. Let's see. I want to do this one. Yeah. I was talking about self-employment briefly, so I think I'm going to talk about that one, too. It is another widely held belief that self-employment is a good option for lots of people. I certainly started out believing that myself. I mean, that's how my father, who was a Holocaust survivor, came here with no money, no education, no nothing. That's how he made enough money for that little clothing store that he bought to be able to move my mom and my sister and I from the tenement in the Bronx where I started my first 6 years to living in a bottom half of a duplex in Queens. So I'm positively predisposed to self-employment. And, of course, I also know on the flip side that employers, especially these days when the job market ain't great, you know, they try to pay people as little as they can possibly get away with, part-time, temp, if they can't offshore. You know, so the salaries, unless you're a star, can stink. So, you know, that's good reason to think that, yeah, self-employment, not a bad idea. I also hear about employers, even the quote, good guys, what the Bay Area would call good guys, nonprofits and universities, they all talk about treating workers well and labor fairly, and yet they, in enormous quantities, use volunteers, interns, quote-unquote, to evade the minimum wage law. Where is this treating labor well? So it's yet more evidence that it feels like, well, sure, let self-employment make sense. Unfortunately, having been self-employed myself for 26 years as a career counselor and consultant to corporations, and helping a lot of people become self-employed, I've become a bit sobered. Being successful at self-employment is a lot more difficult than many people think. As the previous caller says, it requires you not only to be good at what you do, but you've got to be good at marketing and, importantly, willing to market. And many people love what they do, but they hate marketing, just like the psychotherapist Nicole said. That's not easy. And in your small little business, there's usually no infrastructure. You are the IT department. You are the HR department. You are the accounting department. Very few people have all those skill sets. And if you outsource all that and you hire people to do that, and remember, you're paying for individual health insurance, they're not likely to be very much profit left unless you're working 9,000 hours a week. So I'm not, again, this is a pitch for nuance, not black and white, good idea, you know, self-employment good, self-employment bad. But I'm encouraging nuance. I want to be fair and balanced. Some people really are very wise to consider self-employment. If, for example, they're not very employable for whatever reason, they got a big employment gap, or they have a kind of cantankerous personality that doesn't fit well in corporate America, those people, but they're bright, they're self-starters, they are able to solve a lot of problems. Those people may indeed be wise to consider self-employment, as many people who do that very well. Or if you lack one of the key attributes, let's say you do hate marketing, let's say you are like that previous caller who was a psychotherapist, but unlike her, you dislike marketing or you're crappy at it. Let's say you are a bad networker, because these small businesses, you really pretty much have to be a good networker. That's where you want to hire somebody to be your marketing partner, your front person, or somebody behind the scenes who's going to do marketing. But I'll continue on the positive side. I am bullish on a number of small careers, self-employment careers, because they don't cost much money and they are under the radar. So I'm going to just tick off a bunch here. There's a weird idea I got on a plane recently. You know, I hear all the time about corporations going to business schools and asking the instructor, would you want to have your class do a project? It's free labor for the corporation. And instead of the students doing some stupid assignment that just goes into the ether after it's done, it has some practical relevance, which they then put on their resume. Very nice idea. But it's very unsystematized. I think there is a self-employment opportunity to be a broker, to go to corporations and say, I will find you classes to do the work projects you would love to crowdsource, and then find professors who are teaching classes who are looking for an interesting class project, bringing them together, and I make money on as the broker in between. It's a kind of a neat, very pro-social business idea, and requires nothing to start. No inventory, no warehouses, no research and development. I like ideas like that, but most people, like, it's like the cutting edge, too often is the bleeding edge, and because it's a new idea, they're scared it's going to fail. So there are also other low-cost self-employment ideas that I am bullish about for most people. For example, tutoring. I hear that there are tutors, a lot of them, making over $100 an hour. Parents are so frantic about the public schools and their kid not falling behind that they will, pay anything to get their kid, and they wisely realize that one-on-one is the best way to learn anything. So they pay big dollars for tutors, especially if the kid has got learning disabilities or the kid has got, on the spectrum, autism spectrum. There is almost no limit that even not rich people will pay to help their kid. Another under-the-radar but simple idea that's not brand new but I really like because there's a tremendous need. If you are single and you want to meet a romantic partner, you know that very likely part of your strategy is going to be online. You're going to want your Match.com or your IQ Cupid or your JDate ad, Christian Singles, whatever, and your picture and how you describe yourself and how you describe the person you want is critical. And you don't know yourself well enough, you're too insecure. I think there's a great simple employment opportunity for somebody to be a relationship ad coach, to help people reveal their best self online. And again, costs nothing to do, nothing to start. How about this? What if, I've been using more of these intellectual things, but what about if you're more hands-on type? So many people have garages, attics, basements, all this space that is cluttered, filled with crap, and is really unusable. How about a simple little job like you, a self-employment thing, where you go, you probably put, go really low-key. You can just print out some flyers and hang them around rich neighborhoods where people have discretionary income and say, I will clean out your garage, your basement, whatever, and replace it with great shelving and cabinets and whatever. What a nice business for a hands-on person, right? See, those are the kind of self-employments that feel they don't require a lot of money. They don't require a PhD in astrophysics. There is an unmet need. It's not overcrowded. Those are kind of careers I think are cool. How about, you know, people's garage sales? I haven't run one in 20 years. But I, like 20 years ago, I had this, my house full of crap, and I ran a garage sale. And I had to sit there for 2 days. I hated it. It was a pain in the butt. I didn't want, you know, selling my used underwear for $2. Why not be, if you like garage sales, why not run one? Why not, you know, that's your, whether it be garage sales or estate sales even, that you make that your business and you take a percentage of the profits, right? One more. I'm a career counselor. And one of the things that my clients endlessly hate is looking for the job. Cold calling, contacting people, getting that interview. They're happy to show up for the interview, but they hate the you know, they widely regard it, and it does work on average, making cold contacts to potential employers. Why not get why isn't there a good self-employment opportunity in being an agent, a job agent? But not, you know, we have agents for writers or agents for musicians, actors, but yet your garden variety marketing manager, you know, he or she has got to go and do it all him or herself. What if somebody, instead of just being a career counselor, but instead was a job agent whose job was to open doors and call employers and say, I've got this great candidate. He or she is really good at accounting, forensic accounting or whatever it is. And I think you should, he's a guy who's worth talking to. Or she's a woman worth talking to. Can we set up a phone interview? You know, I could see that being a very useful useful self-employment opportunity. In any case, the point here is we're trying to get more nuance about this whole notion of self-employment being good, self-employment being bad. More nuanced approach. Is it right for you? What is really required? And are there ways to reduce the risk? So I'll invite you to call. Again, I'll give out the phone number probably for the last time today. So if you have a comment on my attempt to try to bring more nuance to self-employment, to the notion of whether networking is that centric, which is central, which is what I talked about, or about follow your passion, or you would like a 3-minute workover. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And now let's go to the phones. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind? Hello, it's you.
Hello?
Hi. Yeah, would you please get off speakerphone or turn off your radio so that we don't, so the sound sounds good.
Let me turn off the radio part.
Please do.
Okay, this is actually off. Okay, so my comment, I apologize. My comment actually has to do with the following your passion.
Okay.
I am one of those people that did not end up following my passion, but instead I went ahead and took the opportunities that were presented to me. Mm-hmm. I had an opportunity to go get my teaching credential because a friend said, hey, we need people and here's some money. And then it followed with finding a job, losing my job, finding another job, and even the opportunity to buy a home. So can you speak to that a little bit?
It's pretty much what we were talking about earlier, but I'll try to put a different spin on it. There's a term that was used by John Crumbles, a professor at Stanford, called planned happenstance. It's the only thing he's actually remembered for. It's the notion is if you put yourself in environments where there are lots of interesting people, there's more likely some good thing is likely to happen that you may not have anticipated. And I think that's a legitimate thing. Rather than, you know, the follow your passion is like, you know, I am a musician. I was a musician my whole life from when I was 5. I was a professional pianist from when I was 12. And yet if I stayed laser beam focused on being a pianist, I think that would have blinded me to many other what ended up being far better opportunities. So, yes, if you've got a passion, maybe start going in that direction a bit, but don't have blinkers on so that you're just too laser focused on that. Keep put yourself in environments where smart, interesting, and well-connected people are, and you may indeed find something. Anyway, thank you for the call. I want to get as many calls as I can. I have one more career truth that I want to run by you before we say goodbye for today. So let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind? Hi, it's you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Scott from San Francisco.
Hi, Scott.
Anyway, I've been listening to you for a long time, and I don't know what you took this morning, but you certainly are a lot more lively and chipper than you normally are. Maybe it's that invitation you got.
Yeah, it must
like
be.
I'd like to say that I used to tell my daughter to follow her passion and do the networking thing, and I've had now second thoughts by listening to you. And I think that it would be great if you could wake up every day and do exactly what you like and make enough money to be happy and helping people. But I like the risk-benefit idea, too.
Good. Yeah, I you know, it's easy for me to say because I do like what I do. I do like being a career consultant, if you will. But I really like to think that if I had to be a ditch digger or the dishwasher like that previous caller, I may be wrong, but I like to think that as long as I treated that like an opportunity to contribute, and I maybe if I could do it mindlessly, think about fun things or listen to music, have great music listening on at the time, and it was relaxing, and I was kind to my coworkers, and I became beloved, and I was the go-to guy in dishwashing. I like to think that, although I have zero passion for dishwashing at all, I like to think that it would still feel like a life well led. So anyway, I thank you very much for the call. Let's go take another call. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. I have maybe a little different perspective on following your passion versus compromise.
Great.
I'm 50 years old, and I've actually worked as a working musician for my whole life. But I did it with a sense of compromise in that I pursued avenues of music that were remunerative, mm-hmm. but were not really what I wanted to do too much.
You played Hava Nagila rather than alternative world music, right?
I've actually played Hava Nagila thousands of times.
So have I. Yes, exactly.
And I have fairly, in the past couple of years, come to the feeling that if I were to die tomorrow, I would feel very unfulfilled.
Mm.
And, you know, maybe it depends on what stage of life you're in, but if for me, having, you know, gotten well into middle age, it seems worth it to me to abandon the money-making opportunities, and even if I'm going to die penniless or in a home, to go closer to my true passion.
Great. I'm thrilled with your call. Do you know what that is, and or would you like me to help you try to make that more realistic?
No, I know what that is, and I'm actually going for it. It's just that...
What is it?
It's to continue in music, but just to continue in the actual music that I want to make more so than that which is bringing, you know, pretty good money for all these years.
Right, I understand.
And everyone I know actually in music, you know, they kind of enjoy it who do things like this. But, you know, a lot of people on gigs aren't all that excited about doing the corporate gig stuff.
For what it's worth, because I was there, I played over 2,000 weddings and bar mitzvahs between the age of 12 and 22. And certainly, with the benefit of hindsight, you know, was it rewarding playing Hava Nagila? But I can only tell you that it felt not only fun, not only did I get all those free buffets at all those things, but it was completely ethical work. I was making people happy. I was good at what I did. And while it's not an orgasm, it was not bad. I was glad that I had a better option. But certainly, if the only way I could put food on my table was to play Hava Nagila and the Tarantella and When Irish Eyes Are Smiling for the rest of my life, I think that I would have, rather than be a miserable person who said, oh, I wish I could have played my alternative indie rock, I hate corporate America, I'm not going to play for these rich people, I think that net-net, both I and the world would be better if I had made peace with that, if that was my only option. Because if I do approach every wedding and bar mitzvah with that attitude, I will have made my coworkers, my fellow band members happier. I would have gotten more and perhaps better gigs. I would have been a better husband and spouse. So I think, yes, you shoot for what will feel the most rewarding, that's realistic, but you also try to make the most of every minute.
I agree. I think it's just, you know, you don't want to be the, you know, Debbie Downer on your gig. That's not the point. You want to do a great job no matter what you're doing, but you have to realize that I think people have a lot less energy and time in their life than sometimes they think they have. That most people can't do all sorts of things and, you know, in their spare time, you know, work up that beautiful dream thing.
Yeah,
that,
fair enough.
It takes some giving up to get towards that. Anyway, that's it.
I think your call was great, and I really appreciate that. It really added a nice, a different perspective to the discussion. I really appreciate your call.
Okay, thanks.
Great. Okay, while we have a few minutes left, I promised you that there was one more of the career so-called truths that I wanted to run by you guys. Before we say goodbye, I am going to be talking about this Wednesday at UC Berkeley. It is a public lecture, by the way. It's free. So Google Marty Nemco and UC Berkeley, and you will see that event. And you do have to register, or just go to my blog. Just go to martynemco.blogspot.com, and you'll see the link to register for that. So you can come see me. I'd love to meet you. Noon. It's from noon to one on Wednesday. Okay, so the that one other of the career quote-unquote truths that I'd like to perhaps provide a little more nuance to is the notion that you make your own luck. There are variations on that theme as well. It's, you know, luck comes to the well-prepared, and luck is where, and somebody said, preparation meets opportunity. And another example of this was, I'm a great believer in luck, and I find the harder I work, the more I have of it. Those are all, you know, odes to working hard. Well, while, yeah, working hard will increase your, you know, your quote luck, I am no longer so sure that hard work is as often rewarded as those aphorisms, cliches, whatever imply. Of course, there are a lot of people who do succeed because of their hard work. But I have also seen, and again, that's because I've been doing this so long, over 4,000 clients, 26 years plus, all the people I know in my human life, in my personal life, that many more than a few people don't work hard and succeed anyway. They had the good luck to be born smart and or good looking, not saying that you guys don't work hard, they have an easygoing personality, which is what people like. And they were indeed lucky. They were in the right place at the right time. Where they met somebody, you know, at the right time, and that's when they needed to be. Like this dishwasher guy. He was a dishwasher in London. And it just happened that when the drain clogged, the big boss was right there. And it happened the next day or whatever, next week, he was wanting to open a new restaurant. That's luck. He could have fixed that clog, and the boss could have been a son of a bitch who just didn't want to, you know, took it for granted, didn't even say thank you, and was going to go out there, and the restaurant was going out of business the next day. It was pure luck that the boss had all three of those things. He was a nice guy, he happened to be right there, and he happened to be opening a restaurant. Luck matters much more than I used to think. I used to think, boy, if I'm smart and hardworking enough, everything good's going to happen. It's totally, totally not true, because the converse, not only are there some people who I know who are, you know, not because of their own efforts or have succeeded, but I know plenty of people who are smart, work their guts out, and are still grateful to get a part-time $10 an hour job so they can afford to buy tuna fish and ramen. And yeah, maybe afford even to buy the drugs and alcohol that they use to dull their pain. So again here, the message regarding this so-called career truth, you make your own luck, is more of nuance. I think, yes, working hard will up your odds of success. But maybe it's appropriate to be just a little more charitable. And I don't just mean charity dollars, I mean charitable in spirit, to the people who we might write off as lazy or losers. They may indeed have had bad luck. They may have been born stupid. We don't not allowed to use the word, but not everybody is born with the same intelligence, and everybody knows that quietly. They may have had the bad luck to have been born ugly. Again, it's not a word we're allowed to use. But there is, like in every other variable, is a normal distribution of looks. Some people are gorgeous, and some people are ugly, and most people are somewhere in the middle. And if you had the bad luck to have been born ugly, you will start out life with one or even two strikes against you. It's not that person's fault. Even drive. I think there are some people who come out of the womb with drive, and other people who are laconic, kickback types. That's just who they are. They were that way from when they were 2, and they'll probably be that way when they're 102. So I think luck really, really does matter. Or they didn't end up in the right place at the right time. So they didn't, you know, weren't like that lucky dishwasher. But they instead met a bunch of people who were bad influences on them and turned them into drug addicts or so turned off to America and society that all they did was complain and hold up. They go to protest rallies but never accomplished anything other than hold up a placard. So, if you're successful, maybe what I'm asking you to do is, instead of saying, you make your own luck, maybe it's time for a little more gratitude. And if you're not successful, yeah, I want you to work hard because it ups up your odds. And maybe surround yourself with the kind of people who are most likely to both bring out the best in you and, a la planned happenstance, more likely to have an opportunity for you. What do you think? We only have a couple minutes left, but I'm curious as to what your reactions are to this notion that, you know, maybe it's too tough to say you make your own luck, that maybe we do need to genuflect a bit before the notion that luck plays a bigger role in our lives than we think, and that has great applicability for careers. Phone number, or if you want a three-minute workover, we may have time for one. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And while we've got a call in, so let's just in a moment, let's go right to the phones as soon as we've got that person ready. So welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It is your turn on the air. What's on your mind?
I'd like to share something with you, Marty.
Sure.
I love what you're saying.
Thank you.
I have an expression. I was born with an enthusiasm gene. Whether that's true or not, but here's my little haiku, if there's time for it.
Yes, there is.
Happiness comes, goes. It's your enthusiasm that will carry the day. And the other line that I felt went well with that, it's your enthusiasm that will save the day.
I thank you very much for the call. Yes, enthusiasm, especially in America. America, sometimes Europeans make fun of us for, you know, really prioritizing the enthusiasm thing. And I think some of it is environment. Some of it is, you know, you get beaten, you know, may start out enthusiastic and then life beats you down and suddenly it's hard to be quite so enthusiastic because you maybe weren't so smart or hardworking or whatever. And so you failed at a lot of things. And so it's hard to come out for round 8 in the boxing match when you've gotten the hell kicked out of you for rounds 1 through 7. So again, I think some people, it's genetics. I think some people are more energetic, smarter, whatever, and other people, it's environmental. It doesn't take a genius to say that we're all a product both of our genes but our environment. But in sum, I'll just say this. I really hope to see you Wednesday at UC Berkeley. Go to my blog, martynemko.blogspot.com, and I hope to see you. And that is Work with Marty Nemko for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, and, of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. You know, you seem to like my talking about these career truths, so you know what? I am going to talk about the other 4. I will share the other 4 career truths that may not be so true next week, and, of course, doing those workovers for you. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemko reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.